Hello, I'm Aaron Lohr, and this is the 100th episode of the Endocrine News Podcast. Wow, 100 episodes. We never have made it this far without the wonderful guests that have shared their work and experience. And I also want to thank our brilliant editor, Andrew Harmon. He's amazing. And most of all, I want to thank you, our listeners. Thank you for sharing your ideas, your passion, and your reviews. And I think the best way to celebrate is to keep going and keep growing. And speaking of growth, today we're talking about growth hormone deficiency. We're going to talk about causes, prevalence, why some types may become permanent, available treatments, and we're going to spend some time talking about the importance of adherence to treatment plans. And joining me today is Dr. Sandra Locke of Bambino Gesù Children's Hospital in Rome, Italy. Dr. Locke recently presented some research at Endo 2025 entitled Adherence to GH Treatment in the Transition Age, a Prospective Study. Thank you for being here today, Dr. Locke.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It's really a pleasure to be with you today. Thank you.
All right, let's go ahead and get in. What causes growth hormone deficiency, and what do we know of its prevalence?
Well, growth hormone deficiency can be congenital and can be genetic or caused by malformation of the hypothalamic and pituitary region in the brain, or can be acquired, like in children with tumors or, you know, infections, traumas, some autoimmune processes can cause growth hormone deficiency as well. But as a matter of fact, the great majority of patients with growth hormone deficiency are idiopathic. So we don't know the cause. Around 75-80% of children with growth hormone deficiency, they have idiopathic growth hormone deficiency. So we don't know the cause. And the prevalence in childhood is around 4 to 10,000. And it is unknown in adults, and it's unknown also in the transition age. It's not known the exact prevalence.
And one thing that your study talked a little bit about was persistent or permanent growth hormone deficiency. Why might some cases of growth hormone deficiency become or be persistent or permanent?
That's a tricky issue. They came to our attention a couple of decades ago when we realized that most of the patients with idiopathic growth hormone deficiency actually did respond to growth hormone stimulation testing when retested at the end of growth. I mean, after puberty. So the question arose, but are there some patients who actually remain growth hormone deficiency also in adulthood after the completion of statural growth? And the answer is yes. When we know now that patients with congenital malformation or with genetic form of growth hormone deficiency, as well as those who have growth hormone deficiency secondary to tumors or other organic lesions of the brain, have persistent growth hormone deficiency. So their defect remain also in adulthood. And we know that growth hormones is not only a growth hormone, meaning that it's not essential only for growth, but it's also essential for other body processes, like it influences body composition, the accrual of bone, and it functions in many intermediate metabolic pathways. So it's important for patients that enter into the transition age to eventually maintain their growth hormone therapy to guarantee full maturation of their body system.
Let's talk a little bit about that therapy. How is growth hormone deficiency typically treated?
We just give them growth hormone. We have biosynthetic growth hormone, which is now in the market from the mid-80s. So we have plenty of it. And as a matter of fact, a number of other conditions are treated with growth hormone, not only growth hormone deficiency. And since a couple of years ago, the only available treatment was daily treatment. Now we also have long-acting preparation that can be administered once a week. And in the future, it will probably be have even more convenient preparation that lasts maybe 2 weeks. So there have been a number of significant improvements in growth hormone therapy in the last years. There is some differences related to the dose, which depend on the condition that we're treating and also the age. So, for instance, the dose of growth hormone that you give in a patient in the transition age or in an adult patient are significantly lower than the dose that you use in childhood.
And as with any condition requiring medication or regular treatment, adherence to a treatment plan is really important. That's a lot of what your study was looking at. So what are the risks of not adhering to a treatment plan for growth hormone deficiency?
Let me just say that adherence is an issue in any chronic condition. And people can imagine, but even patients who need treatment for tumors or for life-threatening conditions, you know, sometimes do not adhere to their prescribed therapy. So adherence, it's really an issue in any chronic disease. Poor adherence has many causes. Can has to do with disease, whether it is, you know, painful or not. It can be related to the treatment, can be related to the doctor's communication skills. There are a number of issues that, you know, may impact on adherence. And concerning growth hormone treatment, poor adherence has been shown in real-world studies in about 15-20% of children with growth hormone deficiency, which is a lot. And more than that, adherence has been shown to be negatively correlated with the catch-up growth in the first 2 years. In other words, patients who are not good adherent to growth hormone treatment seems to grow less than those who are good adherence to growth hormone treatment. And this is very important. You know why? Because the final outcome after years of growth hormone, it's significantly correlated to the catch-up growth in the first year of treatment. Meaning that if you do catch-up growth in the first 1 or 2 years of treatment, your final outcome is much better. So monitoring adherence, especially in the first year in childhood, is really crucial to obtain the best results from treatment. Now, what happened in the transition age? Okay, we knew nothing before our study. There were no data on that age population. So we designed a multicenter prospective observational study just to get an idea of what the adherence levels are in those patients. So the study was designed to enroll 60 patients in the transition age. And remember, these are rare patients because the vast majority of patients with childhood onset growth hormone deficiency, their growth hormone deficiency does not persist into the adult age, okay? It's not very common. When the study was designed, it was in the pre-COVID era. And then the COVID came just upon our heads. And we had to stop the study, and we only were able to recruit 51 patients. And 10 out of them dropped out from the study before study termination, so we could not analyze their data because, you know, they dropped out from the study very early. And at the end of the story, we had data on 41 very selected patients, all with severe persistent growth hormone deficiency. About half of them were isolated growth hormone deficiency, and the remaining growth hormone deficiency, which was associated to other pituitary hormone deficiencies. And what we found was that around 40% of the patients had suboptimal adherence to growth hormone treatment. And to be more precise, there were 37% of the patients have suboptimal adherence. Now, what is interesting is that this figure is much higher than that we observed in childhood. And it may have an impact on the efficacy of growth hormone treatment. As a matter of fact, although the data were not significant, the patient who had suboptimal adherence at higher cholesterol levels, higher waist circumference measures, and lower IGF-1 SDS. So it seems that really adherence impact on these parameters also in patients in the transition age.
One of the things that you used in your study I was reading was a device called the Easy Pod. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and how it works?
Oh, well, it's really an interesting device because the Easy Pod is an electronic device. It was launched in almost 20 years ago now, actually. But across the years, it has been improved in its characteristics and in its functioning. It's an electronic device that records and transmits data on dose and injection settings and transmit data to a platform, and you can download these data from the platform and have an idea of the dose, the frequency of the injections, the timing of injection, the time of the day the injections are performed, and lots of other useful information. And this is an objective method to record adherence. So by using the Easy Pod, we were able to record the adherence data of these patients across 1 year observation.
Yeah, I always like to ask people, you know, is there anything about your findings that surprised you? You mentioned a couple things already, that the rate of suboptimal adherence was close to 40%. You also mentioned some of the other correlations that you noticed, but what surprised you most about what you found in your study?
Well, the fact that adult patients are much less adherent to growth hormone treatment than children. I mean, isn't it surprising?
I think it is.
I mean, when we look at the data, you see, hey guys, I mean, almost 40% of adult people, which, you know, usually are responsible and, you know, they understand what they're doing, you know.
Why it's important.
why it's important? Well, yeah. Almost 40% have suboptimal adherence. That was very surprising.
So now that we have a better understanding that there is this suboptimal adherence, what should healthcare providers and patients do with this information?
Well, we come back to what causes poor adherence. You know, as I told you before, poor adherence may have many causes, including, as you mentioned before, a poor understanding of the condition. Mm-hmm. Okay? There are some patients who really are not really aware about their condition, and they are not aware of the importance of treatment. And so they just don't care about, you know, missing some injections. So that could be a reason. Other reason, you know, can be related to the doctor communication or to the disease itself, or no, to social reason, psychosocial reason also can be in some instances in place. Now, what should we do first is to identify these patients with poor adherence as early as possible and try to identify the causes that lead to poor adherence in these patients and act upon these causes to correct the problem. And in children, we now have several programs to tackle poor adherence, and these programs are directed either to the patient or to the caregivers. which in the case of children usually are parents or their, you know, tutors or whatever. But in adults, apparently, it could be much easier because you don't have intermediates. You just talk to the patient and try to find out what the real problem are and to solve these problems as soon as possible.
Well, this has been a wonderful conversation, Dr. Luque. We are out of time. I just want to thank you so much for being on the podcast today, sharing your work and your experience, and really reinforcing, you know, how important it is to have optimal adherence to our treatment plans. Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thank you very much.
And that's all for this 100th episode. I hope you enjoyed it. You know, we've covered a lot on this podcast over the years. Maybe you haven't heard it all yet. You can listen to all of our episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get podcasts. You can even find us on YouTube. And of course, you can always go to endocrine.org/podcast. If you want us to do another 100 episodes, please be sure to leave us a review. And if there's something you'd like to hear us talk about on the podcast, let me know by sending your idea to podcast@endocrine.org. Until next time, thanks for listening.
Endocrine News Podcasts are a free service of the Endocrine Society. To learn more or to become a member, visit the Society's website at www.endocrine.org.